Welcome back to Making It So. I'm your host, Craig, and my co-host, Maddie. How you going, buddy?
That music haunts my dreams.
Really?
Ugh.
I know you're not a fan of the Discovery theme at all, but hey, it is what it is. We are back. It has been quite a while since we've been on Making It So. Last episode of Making It So we did was the season wrap-up for, was it season 2 of Strange New Worlds?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was a good 6 months, if not more, ago now.
Wow, that's gone quick.
So this is our episode 23, but today we're covering Star Trek Discovery, season 5, episode 1, Red Directive.
How did you get me here?
Yeah, look, I didn't think it would happen. I really didn't. Like when I said to you, look, I want to do the last season of Discovery, you just agreed.
Yeah, I don't know.
Were you drunk?
Let the record show I'm here under duress.
Like, I was surprised. Like you,
I'm surprised I'm here.
Like, you agreed to it and yeah.
Yeah.
So, today is actually Easter Monday.
As of recording, yeah, we're recording Easter Monday.
So, Maddie and I have managed to get hold of the first 4 episodes.
Yeah, we were very earlier. Lucky.
So,
yeah, got a screener. So, we've seen the first 4 episodes of Discovery. So we'll try and get these out. Well, we're going to get them early as we can, but then obviously upload them so that we're not going to spoil anything for anybody.
Yeah, so these first 4 episodes, we will make sure that we upload them the day of when the episode
release,
airs.
Yeah.
The release episode, because we don't want to spoil things for people.
No.
So.
I mean, they'll spoil it themselves in the end.
Look, if you want to listen to us, you know, before you've watched the episode, fair enough. That's up to you. So. Shall I get into the synopsis?
Yeah, let's do it.
All right, well, look, I'm even going to...
Oh, email.
As I said, this episode is called Red Directive. So after an 800-year-old Romulan vessel is found, Captain Burnham and the USS Discovery are sent to retrieve it. But the artifact inside is stolen, starting an epic chase. Saru is offered a lifetime position. So, little bit of change coming for Discovery, potentially, in its last season.
I mean, it's been the show of change, hasn't it? I think for the first 3 years they had different showrunners every year, different writers trying to find their footing. So
It almost like just from watching these first 4 episodes, obviously talking about just this one, it seems like Discovery may have finally found its foot, really, or its feet, I should say.
It's cloven Saru feet. It's
yeah.
Like, yeah, I think. Michael has definitely settled into her role as captain.
She's matured.
Yeah, and she's just much more at ease. She feels less on edge all the time and she's more confident in herself and confident in her captaincy. I did think it was weird that Saru is still a captain as well. So, like, in this episode...
And him being the first officer.
Yeah. Like, there was this weird moment where... I guess it must have been when Michael was, like, surfing on board the
Oh, let's the talk about ship. That.
But everyone... Like, all the bridge officers were being like, I, Mr. Saru. And I'm like... I get you can't call him captain. Well, he is a captain. You should be able to call him captain, but he's not your captain. He's your first officer.
Before we go further, Maddie...
Oh, yeah. Well, we can't.
Look, you know, spoilers. If you don't want to be spoiled, don't listen to what we're talking about right now. Yeah. Right, we're going to continue now.
Yeah, just... And it's not the first season. Like, wasn't there a season earlier on where, like, Tilly was her first officer as, like, an ensign or a cadet or something like that?
Yeah.
The chain of command is so weird on Discovery because, yeah, you've got 2 captains... One captain being the first officer in Saru. But yeah, then
Saru was the captain at one point.
Yeah, so it's weird that he hung around for that. So it made sense, you know, that he's been given this opportunity to go and do something else because he doesn't deserve a demotion to commander. So it's like they need to give him something to do. But it hit my ear wrong when it's like all the lieutenants and lieutenant commanders were saying, I, Mr. Saru. And I'm like, there's got to be something else they could have called him. Just to show a little bit more respect in that situation. Because I feel like Mr. is what, you know, the captains call their other officers, you know.
Yeah, Mr. like Data, Mr. Data.
Mr. Data, Mr. Sulu, Mr. Paris, Mr. Kim, you know, all that kind of stuff. So it felt weird for Yeah, like a lieutenant commander to be calling a captain Mr. Saru. Just hit my ear weird.
Yeah, like to me, not necessarily. Because I know in the Australian Defence Force, when we train officers, even as senior non-commissioned officers, we will call them like Mr. or Miss, you know, whatever their name is. Like even the captains that are at work, I still call them, you know, Mr. whatever their name is sometimes.
Yeah, but he is commissioned though. Like he's a...
Yeah, he is. You know, which is what... Yeah, it's fine. Like, yeah.
I guess they just maybe wanted to just not confuse the audience. Like if someone's new to the show and has come in and like...
You don't want to call him Captain.
Yeah, they don't want to have this whole scene of everyone calling him Captain Saru. But they could have just said Sir. Like I, Sir.
Yeah.
Like why did... And it's quicker as well. Like... You know, Mr.
With the Saru. Amount of times they said Mr. Saru, it maybe pushed the episode to the right length that they wanted.
maybe. yeah, so it just hit my ear weird. Give me an eye, sir, and that's fine. Yeah, if that's the intent was to not confuse people to be like, oh, wait, he's the captain as well? You know.
So this episode, it starts with Michael Burnham basically surfing on the top of a starship at warp.
Oh, that's right. They do that annoying thing where they do that and then it's like
15 hours earlier or whatever it is. Yeah. And I was like, what the hell? Is this even possible? But then I thought about it and I was like, look, there's no real friction. Yeah, there's no air there pushing in. She'd be inside the warp bubble.
Yeah, I didn't have an issue with it at that moment. It was later on when we come back to that moment and she like...
She's phasering?
No. She jumps off and like she's like has to exit the bubble. Yeah,
that would tear her to pieces.
Right? Otherwise, why are we building starships? Why are we not just flying around in space on our own? Like, yeah, that kind of, I was like, oh, okay. But, you know, it's the 32nd century now, so I guess they can do whatever they want.
Yeah.
There was that whole thing, like, that was one of the problems I had was like the lack of peril in that, like, You know, getting to the whole mole and lock thing, it's like they throw this grenade at her, which like creates a hull breach that she falls out of. But because the programmable matter and all that kind of stuff, she just instantly has an EV suit all around her with a jetpack on her back. So I'm like, oh, well, there's no...
I thought that was cool, though.
It's cool, but it's just like, oh, there's no peril. And then like later on when they're like on those like the Star Wars sand bikes.
Is that this episode?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, cool. We've just got to be very careful what we talk about here so we don't spoil anyone for upcoming episodes.
So when they're on the like the Star Wars sand bikes, at one point
they've got a shield.
They have shields as well.
I thought that was cool.
It's cool, but I'm just like, where's the peril? At what point did we think any of them were ever going to get hurt? You know what I mean? Like they're not really putting their lives on the line when there's no way for them to put their lives on the line. Like yeah, it was weird.
One thing I will, like, obviously Maddie and I have both been quite critical of Discovery in the past. Like, in our other podcasts, I know we haven't done a specific Discovery podcast before, but we have mentioned Discovery several times and we really have shit on it a bit.
Oh, yeah.
But one thing I will say for Discovery about the show itself is... The CGI is next level.
I think it's always been.
It's always been.
Even when Discovery like that. Remember the very, very first teaser we ever got was like the Discovery coming out of like a space dock inside an asteroid or whatever it was. And it was like, I remember going, oh, this looks really cool. This CGI is so well done. And then I'm like, oh, God, that ship's really ugly.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so, like, the CGI has always been really, really good. And I think, yeah, this season so far, it's upping it a little bit more. And yeah. You know, they're doing some really – like I said, as much as in-world I'm not a fan of, yeah, like her just falling out of a hull breach and it's not a problem, that was a really cool shot. You know, it was really shot really well in the way, like, the camera followed her out into the debris field and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, all that stuff looks really, really good. But yeah, for me, it's story first.
And it definitely looks better than, say, the JJ Films CGI as well, I think.
Yeah, I would say you're right. Like, if you compare Michael surfing on the top of that ship compared to, like, was it Into Darkness, where, like, Spock and Uhura and Khan were like surfing on top of those other like hover subway or whatever, or the railway, whatever it was. This looked a lot better than So yeah.
And that didn't look bad.
I mean, that was also, I guess, 10 years ago at this point as well. So
yeah, still like for a TV show budget, like I'm guessing this show has a $2 million per episode budget. I'm guessing somewhere along around there, maybe
probably,
5 million.
Probably more, yeah.
You know, that they've actually done very, very well. Yeah, with it. I'm quite impressed. Like,
I think it's the nicest the show's ever looked. I like these uniforms. I think they're a lot better than anything we've had in the past for Discovery. Like those blue ones were just terrible. There's maybe a little bit too much stuff going on around the neck, like too many little bits and pieces on and that kind of stuff. But
I think the pips are too small.
Well, yeah, they're attached to the comm badge. It's just these little pips on a comm badge. And then I'm like...
Oh, you see like on Michael's collar as well. Oh, sorry, not collar, on her shoulder here. Yeah. There's like, there's a couple of bars, but then there's like four pips.
Oh, I only see them on the comm badge. There's like a corresponding number of pips on the comm badge. But then there's just that weird like gold and black thing like right on their neck that I'm like, does that need to be there? Like, is that... Is that showing rank? I know with some people I've seen, like, it's got, like, two bars or something, but I think it's still infinitely better than those horrible blue things that they were wearing.
Yeah, definitely.
For those first few seasons.
Yeah, I did not like those uniforms at all.
And, I mean, Burnham's braids look amazing.
Like, oh, yeah. She looks badass. Just
the longest, most impractical braids, but damn, they look good. And even, like... subtly through the next spoiler for the next couple of episodes, like they're even styled slightly differently in certain things, like, you know, to the left, to the right, down the center part, and they just look so schmick. I love them. Yeah, they're really good.
Yeah, she's like the first time I ever remember seeing was a Sonequa Martin Green as an actress was probably in The Walking Dead.
Same.
She's definitely come a long way, and her acting has come a long way. Even, I think, since the first season of Discovery, her acting has come a long way.
Oh, yeah. Like, I think about, I guess, well, you know Next Generation better than I do, but I think about, like, Sisko and Janeway in, like, their first couple of seasons were very different to what they were by, like, season three, season four, season five. So I think Sneak was in that same regard, is she's finally been able to sort of ease into it and is a lot more sort of chill and in control and confident, both as a character... And I guess I'm guessing in her personal life, like she's finally got an understanding of who Burnham is, given that, you know, the writing team and the showrunners have changed so regularly on the show. I think now she's finally getting a little bit of stability to really feel like she can take some ownership over the character of Burnham.
Yeah. What did you think of that blue cocktail that they were drinking at the start with like the bubble on the top?
I mean,
I thought it was interesting.
I mean, you see that in every bar everywhere at the moment is the little smoky bubble gun. Like Disney are doing that at the moment on their cruises. You can just like every drink you get has like a little bubble gun on the top of it.
Really?
Yeah.
I didn't know.
Yeah, there's a comic book bar in the city here in Brisbane as well that does a drink like that.
Interesting.
There's two things in that scene. Again, they're very nitpicky, but in that scene there was two things that jumped out as me as these people, like whoever's behind this show doesn't quite know what they're doing. One was the waitress called it the Federation logo.
Yep.
And I'm like, well, no, it's the Federation seal. I would take seal. I would take crest. It's not a corporation. It's not a logo. It's their flag. That's like calling your flag a logo for your country. Yeah. I'm like, no, that's some LA branding bullshit
there. A sigil?
Yeah. I feel like Klingons have sigils. Klingons have the sigils. And then the other thing is when Stamets is having a whinge about the spore drive.
Oh.
I wish they'd get rid of the spore drive, but they lean heavy into it still.
Well, Discovery is the only ship that's got it because they failed, apparently.
That was so weird that Adira was like, oh, well, Discovery will be unique. It's like, because it'll be the only one with it. It's like, bitch, it's been the only one with it. Except for the, what was it, in like the opening season, there was like the Crossfield class, like Discovery sister ship or whatever, that was like destroyed. And that's where they found the tardigrade or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
There's been no other ship like Discovery since then.
No.
So it's already been unique. But the really petty thing that pissed me off is, yeah, is when Stamets is whinging about all that stuff, he like taps his comm badge and it brings up like a, like, cause they're at like a, an event. They're at like a, what would you call it? Like a little gathering, you know, and you know, you go to those things now, now in our time, you go to those things and you have to go and get your little name badge off the counter and you put it on your, you know, on your chest. People know what your name is. He like touched his comm badge and a holographic one popped up that said, you know, Lieutenant Commander Stamets, you know, visionary or whatever it was. But then it disappeared again. What's the point in having a name badge that isn't visible when you're at a mixer where to break the ice, you have your name on your chest so that people can approach you and be like, oh, you... Makes no sense.
Tilly likes a guy.
Oh, my God.
It was very awkward.
The yeah, the scene where they get back to her quarters, like where that guy walks her back, was so uncomfortably awkward. I legitimately don't know whether that guy's actually interested in Tilly or not, because it was just so awkward, even for Tilly.
Yeah.
Even for Tilly.
And she was playing drunk as well.
Yeah.
I've got to mention too, was it Mary Wiseman who plays Tilly?
Oh, yep.
She must be on some good Hollywood dollars now. She.
Oh, really?
Well, I don't want to say anything too bad about her because she's she seems like a very nice person. But have you noticed over the last, what, five seasons now, she's slowly put on weight as seasons go through?
Has she?
Yeah, I think she has.
I would say she'd lost it because I do remember in season one people were very vocal about her body type, which I thought was crazy given when there's people like Col Meany rocking around in Deep Space Nine. You can be any body type and be a Starfleet officer.
I think she has put on a little bit. But, you know, like, don't get me wrong, like, she's still a great person and everything.
I hadn't noticed. I just thought a lot of the budget was going into her hair. Her hair
is huge.
Is improved a thousandfold between season one and now. But yeah, no, the,
how old do you think she is, by the way?
Probably older than she's playing. Cause
definitely,
like she was,
definitely.
She was a, mind you, we're only in our fifth season. I feel like the show's been going for 10 years.
She's actually born in 1985. She's a year younger than us.
Yeah. Wow.
I think she definitely must be like, she would be playing an early to mid 20s, surely.
Well, she was a cadet when the show started. And that was the other thing that bothers me about her character is, and again with these weird chains of command where it's like, I believe she's a lieutenant now and she's like, you know, quote unquote in charge of or the head of like training all these cadets. It was only 3 years ago, well, and 1,000 years ago, she was like a cadet and an ensign. Like I don't know what massive amounts of real world experience she has. Like, I know, like, compared to us, like, she's been through the fucking ringer.
Oh, yeah.
But compared to your average Starfleet officer, it's kind of just like another day at the office in the things that she's been through, I feel like. So, yeah, that's always been a bit of a weird thing to me, the way they kind of semi-wrote her out of the season, last season, as, yeah, suddenly, like, training...
Yeah, well, because yeah, she was going to teach at, you know, Starfleet Academy.
Yeah.
Spoiler: they're doing a Starfleet Academy series.
Oh, yeah,
in the 32nd century, which I'm guessing she's going to be in quite a bit.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I feel like she's become a bit of a fan favorite.
I do like her as a character, actually. My favorite, like, I know we're going back into the earlier seasons of Discovery with what I'm about to say here.
Mm.
When she played Mirror Universe Tilly, I thought that was awesome.
Oh yeah, with like the gold armor and the straightened hair.
Yeah, she was cool in that.
Yeah, yeah.
She was very badass. But yeah, drunk Tilly liked a guy. And yeah, when they went back to her quarters, he was obviously angling for a little bit more.
Really? Yeah. I got the vibe he couldn't get out of there fast enough.
No, I thought he was
She was way too awkward.
Yeah, and I thought he was he was keen for a little bit more. She was as well, I think, but she was just a bit awkward and yeah, it didn't really come off the way I think they hoped it would.
Yeah, I think he was probably then. If I look, I still can't tell if he is interested or
I think he is.
Perhaps he was, and then she put him off because to me it seemed like he couldn't get out of there fast enough. But it was also, I think, she was so drunk. He's like, I'm not going to take advantage of this extremely drunk woman.
Yeah,
I'm just going to get out of here. Because this is way too awkward. But at the end, she's like, you know, let's do this again. And he's like, yeah, sure, okay. So maybe she's finally found her equal when it comes to being the most awkward person on the planet. Something I thought was weird, though, is later on when, is it Saru? I believe it's Saru and Michael are talking about, they're trying to get some information and it's like, oh, we need more information from a different database. We need someone who has access to a different database.
And then they get Tilly to hack?
Yeah. But they're talking about, they're trying to get more information about the Romulans from 800 years ago. And they're saying, we need someone who has access to a different database. Saru's banging the president of the Vulcan slash Romulan homeworld now. I thought they were referring to her. And he was going to ask her because it's like, well, what database would Tilly have access to that Michael and Saru wouldn't? Well,
so this brings me to...
Just the wording was weird.
Dr. Kovic.
The guy from Up.
Yes. Yeah. So, what's his name? David Cronenberg or something. That's his name?
Cronenberg?
Something along those lines. He took Michael to the Infinity Room.
Ugh.
All right. It's some sort of secure facility... Where you could see no walls or anything. Like,
I mean, in a universe where they can just teleport to any room they want, like at thought, it seems like overkill.
Yeah. Did they physically transport somewhere or was it a thing that allowed them to tap into their minds so they could talk in minds?
Because the Admiral gave him back the little glass infinity thing.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming it was a transport.
That was somewhere. Like the key to get in there?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Like Cronenberg... Oh, sorry, the guy from Up gave...
Kovic
gave it to the Admiral. The Admiral then said, went and got Michael, and then that was their key to get in, and then he gave it back to the guy from Up after their little meeting.
Yeah, for the Red Directive mission that they're being sent on.
Some of these terms, man.
Look, I guess, look... Red Directive, yeah, okay. Like, we've obviously heard that before. Like, and it sort of takes me back to, like, Omega Directive as well. Like, basically, everything must stop for these missions.
Yeah, I guess once you run out of Greek letters, I guess maybe they had to turn to colours. I guess it's been 800 years, so they're like, well, we already have the Omega Directive. We now have a new directive. Well, we can't... Whoop. Red and yellow and pink and... I wonder what the pink directive is. Although, you wouldn't want to be messing with the brown directive, would you?
And what happens if there's a pink and a brown directive together?
There's probably two pink directives.
Or do they call it brown? Do they call it code brown instead?
Well, no, I was going for a barracuda joke. I was saying...
Yeah, I know.
Two in the pink, one in the stink.
Anyway, yeah, so red directive and the Infinity Room. I'm not sure how I feel about the Infinity Room. Dr. Kovic, yeah. Though, who does he work for? Obviously, he, you know, works for the Federation / Starfleet, but, you know, is he Starfleet intelligence? Is he some sort of 32nd century version of Section 31? Like, they've been very, very cagey about him throughout the whole of Discovery.
Yeah.
And why does he still wear glasses? He's the only person that you see in Star Trek wearing glasses. True. I can't think of anyone else.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure early on when we first met him in one of the earlier seasons, they kind of mentioned something about his glasses. But I guess
you could hide behind old Martok and his, I do not want an artificial eye.
Yeah, fair.
So maybe he didn't want to get...
Laser surgery?
Yeah.
Something we can do now?
Yeah. Or Nog with his artificial leg. He's like, meh.
Yeah.
Yeah, who knows? Yeah, he's a very weird character. And yeah, I really didn't pay enough attention in seasons 3 and 4 to know what he is or who he is or anything about him. It's very strange that they're still including him.
Starfleet is a very sort of eclectic mix of people these days since, you know, the burn, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know what he brings. Like, I feel like the Admiral could have just given Burnham all this information between... Unless...
Well, where did he get this information from?
Yeah, very true.
Like, what agency does he work for?
Yeah, given that Starfleet is supposed to be like, that's your exploratory missions. And spoiler alert, they're not doing a lot of exploring. Every time we see the weird Starbase Federation headquarters thing, there's just a lot of Federation ships just doing laps around it. Just circling around.
Chilling out.
But these people not out helping planets or exploring or trying to, you know, rebuild the Federation or whatever. So, yeah.
Well, it seems like they are. So
it's a lot of ships just hanging around doing nothing, though.
Yeah, well, it makes me wonder how many ships that Starfleet actually has at this point as well. Mm. Like, obviously, they probably lost a lot during the burn. But then there was ships that were stranded out, you know, many.
That's right, because wasn't it ships at warp when the burn happened exploded, or was it just any ship with antimatter exploded?
I think it was any ship that was utilizing its core at the time.
Yeah, right.
So, you know, like, there could have been, you know, ships that were hundreds of light years away that, you know, obviously couldn't go to warp anymore and get home, but I guess they could have still spoken through subspace. So,
yeah.
You know, there was still connection between the planets. I don't know. It's something I need to go back and rewatch. Like, those people that are listening.
I'll never do that.
No, I will. But people that are listening to this, like, are you fans of Discovery? Like, can you explain it to us? Jump down in the comments. Yeah,
they're probably screaming at us going, you fucking idiot. This is why they explained it in season 3, episode 6, blah, 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 blah. Because, I don't even know how all those ships are going to warp if they're not using the dilithium. They're using, like, a different version of warp that I just didn't pay enough attention to. Yeah. So.
Well, it's because the dilithium is what regulates the warp field, isn't it?
I thought it's what creates. It's a matter-antimatter explosion.
But then why couldn't the Romulans still go to warp then?
Because they don't use dilithium. Their ships are powered by a quantum singularity.
Yeah, exactly. So why couldn't they still go to warp during the burn?
Well, they didn't exist anymore, did they? Because of the whole Navarre thing? I don't know. We're talking about other seasons.
Yeah,
it's not enough.
Anyway, so there was a Romulan ship in a gravity well graveyard. And they found it, and it was 800 years old.
Yeah.
And lethal force was authorized by Dr. Kovich to, you know, when they went in there to see what was happening, essentially.
It's another good question why he can authorize that, but... You know, it is what it is.
Yeah, he definitely wields a lot of power. And I'm not sure how I feel about it. And then, you know, from that point, that takes us to the opening credits of the episode. So there seemed to be like a lot that happened in that first little bit there.
Yeah. I didn't mind the going back to the drinks, I didn't mind the mention that they tasted like Jumja sticks. That was a nice little. I think there are a lot of the Easter eggs in these early episodes, just throwing in little old school references.
What do you think of the away team suits that they wear? I like it.
The silver things?
So one thing I've always sort of thought about, remember like, what was it, the Star Trek game Elite Force?
Oh, yes.
So they had like an away team suit that they sort of wore over their uniforms. Yeah, I think it's actually much more practical to have something like that compared to just wearing the normal bridge uniform on away missions.
Well, I guess it's... I mean, that was for gameplay, so they could hide the fact that there was, like, armor built in, so when you got shot, you didn't die immediately for away team and that kind of stuff.
I guess that's what they've done here.
I think it's a little more practical because I know, obviously, like, in your 2370s sort of era, you know, behind the scenes, a lot of those actors and actresses are like... We hate these uniforms. We don't even have pockets. We don't even have a pocket or anything. But I guess for me, the weird part is, it's an emergency. We need to get there quick. Let's all go change outfits. I guess in the 32nd century with programmable matter, she can put on a whole EVA suit in an eighth of a second. So maybe they can literally just, as they're walking to the turbo lift, to the transporter room, whatever, just... put on a new outfit. Maybe that's on over the top of their duty uniform. I have no idea. They look cool, but it's the same issue I had with like all the DC TV shows, all the like the CW, Arrow and Flash and all that kind of stuff. It's like, oh my god, it's an emergency. let's all go and get changed in our super, into our superhero outfits. whereas I'm used to shows like Buffy, where it was like, well, Buffy was a superhero, but she just rocked up in whatever she was wearing. She's like, it's an emergency. I have to get there now to save the day. So, yeah, it's just that little bit of suspension of disbelief.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. What did you think of the phaser pistol, hand phaser, turning into the rifle?
That was fun.
I liked it. It was cool.
I know a lot of old school Trek fans, I mean, even when they were introduced in Next Generation, like those phaser rifles, they were like, but it's a phaser. What is putting it into rifle form change about it? Like, it's not like you're changing, like, the gauge of the bullet or whatever,
more,
or that.
More power?
You would think more power, more range. I know the DS9 ones had, like, a little flip-up scope and all those kind of things. But yeah, in the case of programmable matter, I just don't know like what benefit that gave her in terms of going from a handheld into a big, aside from it looking cool as hell.
Yeah.
What benefit did that give her?
And then
that I don't know.
Michael, she fell through the hull breach in that ship.
Yeah.
And into open space, and then her suit obviously formed around her to keep her alive and protect her, which I thought that was cool. That was very, very cool. But
yeah, and she had a little jetpack that she kind of...
Convenient, you know?
Yeah.
I guess we're still sort of comparing it to like our 24th, 25th century, you know, Star Trek that we know and love.
Yeah, I'm sure when like DS9 and Next Generation came along, people who were fans of the original series were like, oh, it's too advanced. They're saying all the things I'm saying. It's too advanced. There's no peril, blah, 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 blah. So I'm sure it's just a matter of adjusting to the new norm.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess it's you know, it's also a matter of, you know, when we're spoiled with like Marvel TV shows and Iron Man and stuff like that, you look at it and you go, well, Tony Stark's been doing that since 2008.
That's true.
So it doesn't seem as advanced.
I never really thought about it in that sort of way.
Mm.
Yeah, I mean, it does make sense.
Yeah, just that was the issue I always had with Discovery, with the little like the 3D like heads up displays like on the bridge and stuff like that. I'm like, oh well, we've kind of had that for a while now. It doesn't seem.
So as Michael Burnham is surfing on top of this other ship, essentially, Captain Rayner's ship comes in and grabs it with a tractor beam, and he just won't let go. And they're having a mad argument over comms.
Douchebag.
So, what race is he? He's got pointy ears like a Vulcan or a Romulan.
Yeah, I had to look it up because it was bugging me. He's a Kelleran.
Okay, where have we seen them before?
Only they were a background alien in an episode of Deep Space Nine. I want to say season 2. It's called Armageddon Game, and it's where kind of Bashir and O'Brien become friends for the first time. And there's like these two warring races, Alpha Quadrant species. And they're both warring, and they had like this horrible like biogenic weapon, and O'Brien and Bashir helped them destroy it, kill it, and then these two races turned on O'Brien and Bashir and wanted to kill them because they held the knowledge of this horrible weapon.
I feel like they should have mentioned what race he is. Like, obviously,
yeah.
At this time in the 32nd century, because of the burn, there's been a lot of racial interbreeding, which is fine. There's no problem with that. But because his ears did look very Vulcan, but there was also like something else there as well.
Yeah, like you a can, gargoyle kind of edge. But that could also be, it could have been battle damage. It could have been a Vulcan with some like damaged ears.
But,
or,
like you could be mistaken, or you could be forgiven for mistaking him for being a Vulcan or a Romulan.
Yeah, well, there's even so many ear-based aliens in Star Trek.
I feel they needed to just say, because he could have been like a hybrid, half-half.
Yeah.
You know?
Because didn't they mention it with the president from last season? She's like part Cardassian, part human or something like that. Obviously, I think probably at this stage more human than Cardassian because she had very human skin tone. Whereas when you look at someone like Zial, Golda Cup daughter, who was half Cardassian and half Bajoran, still had a very much Cardassian skin tone. Lighter than a normal Cardassian.
Oh, definitely,
But not human tone. But I believe they mentioned that she was part Cardassian or something.
Oh, she
like
definitely
that.
Is part Cardassian.
Oh, yeah, you can tell, but I just mean in dialogue.
Oh, they did.
They mentioned it. So, yeah, it would have been nice to... because, yeah, this guy's been added to the opening credits. That actor is... He's part of the opening credits. So he's here for the whole season, as far as I'm led to believe. So yeah, it would have been nice to get a little bit more on him. Maybe we will later on. But I guess in the same way, like, we both frothed over who was the chicken? Picard, the bald chick?
Taveen.
Half
Delton.
Half Delton. They never mentioned that in dialogue. That was only in, you know, interviews with her and stuff like that. She said, oh, okay, I'm half Romulan and I'm half Delton, or three quarters Romulan, one quarter Delton, or whatever. She'd met. That was never mentioned on screen.
And I also think as fans, we sort of figured that out for ourselves as well.
Yeah.
Like, purely because of the bald head, I'm guessing.
Yeah. So yeah, maybe we'll get a bit more of his backstory as we go.
Yeah, no, I'm keen. Like, about it, he's very gruff. I'm not sure if I like him as a character or as a person at this point.
Yeah.
Like, because it's just, it. From what I could tell, his ship was, his crew ship people were stranded away from the rest of the fleet with the burn. And, yeah, but then again, the burn was 100 years. So maybe he went on like a long mission, because Starfleet still had dilithium to do missions, I guess.
Oh, that's right. But it was like really, really rare.
It was very rare.
That's right.
So there must be some sort of redeeming quality for him to have gotten to be a Starfleet captain.
Yeah, I guess so.
Because obviously we've seen a lot of, you know, asshole captains and.
Yeah.
Like, even to begin with.
It's a classic writing cliche in anything.
Even to begin with, like, Sisko, when he was a commander at the beginning, I was a bit like, oh, this guy's pretty gruff. Like, I didn't particularly like him when I first saw him in DS9, but then he grew on me a lot.
Mm.
Like, even, was it Captain Shaw in Picard Season 3?
Oh, Beardy McBeardface.
Yeah, he, like, a lot of people didn't like him, but then a lot of people did like him. And
yeah,
he did have some redeeming qualities about him. Yeah, at the same time...
Me strains to think of any redeeming qualities.
Yeah, Maddie's like looking at me going, are you sure? Like, there were parts of him that, you know, came through as being a good person, but then a lot of the time he was an arsehole. So, and I'm kind of getting that Rayner's a bit of a dick.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, there's definitely going to be like tension between him and Michael moving forward. They both have very different ways of captaining. But I think also they're both just as stubborn as each other.
Oh, definitely.
So that's why there was kind of that standoff. But as always, once again, Michael was right.
She could never be wrong, can she?
Yeah.
So when Michael jumps out of the warp bubble off that smaller ship, whatever it was there.
Oh, yeah, Molan Locke's ship or whatever
it was. Yeah, it did like this mad like turn, like 360 sort of twist, and then fired off a whole bunch of warp drones in lots of different directions. I thought that was a very cool way of masking its own warp signature, I thought.
Yeah, we've definitely heard about that before, and that's been a plot point in a lot of episodes going all the way back to Next Generation. But yeah, that's the first time I think we've kind of seen it. They've had the money to just show that, you know?
It kind of, you know... In a way, it kind of reminded me of the crybaby from...
Oh, absolutely.
Firefly? Yeah,
absolutely.
No, that was in the Serenity movie, wasn't it?
I think it was in both.
Was it the crybaby?
Yeah.
I can't remember. But yeah, it did remind me of that a little bit.
Yeah, so. No, definitely. It's yeah, absolutely.
So she takes the crew to see Booker because Booker is going to help them. So...
Okay. This I have an issue with. They're playing up this Michael and Booker have kind of grown apart since last season. He's only at Europa. Europa's like one of the moons of Jupiter or Saturn or whatever it is. So he's basically in the Sol system.
But isn't he a criminal now?
No, he's like helping out. He's like, you've got to go and, you know, help and do this and doing like, I guess, community service. So maybe there is a criminal element to that. But... I feel like that shouldn't stop them from being able to see each other or communicate, or, you know, it's not like he's unreachable.
No, is anybody unreachable in this time period?
Yeah, like, and it's weird because then it's like, well, and then they sort of seem to have a standoff. I mean, you could have called. You could like, I just yeah, I don't like it. It didn't seem true to the world that we're in, and given that their goodbye at the end of last season was so sort of heartfelt and, you know, I'll see you soon, and they really do love each other, but I don't believe that people who feel that way about each other could grow apart the way that they're insinuating this episode.
Mm. Yeah, it was weird and it was a little bit awkward, but hey, look, at least we still got to see Grudge, the cat.
The queen.
Mole and Lork, or Lark, they're the two crims. They're the two bad guys that we're going to be, I'm guessing, that we're following for this season to try and, you know, to try and beat, essentially.
I have a theory.
Okay, go on, send it.
Locke, the green guy.
Yeah.
He could be a changeling.
Interesting.
Could be Discovery's version of a changeling.
As in a changeling like the changelings we know from DS9?
Yes, the Gamma Quadrant founder changeling.
What makes you say that?
Well, there was just this weird moment where when they both take off their helmets, his face is made of like green jello and it kind of molds and then becomes his face. But then he just has that makeup face for the rest of the episode.
Mm.
So he's not 100% carbon-based, I believe. And all the little displays, which he's like, she's human, he's unknown.
Yeah, that's
true. All the stats were like unknown. We don't know what he is.
Yeah, because we've never seen anybody of his race before that we can tell.
He looks kind of familiar, like a little bit like Lars from Deep Space Nine, but then also a little bit like, oh God, what's his name? The guy that played Heimdall in the
Marvel movies.
In the Marvel movies. What's his name?
Oh, now you're really going to test me. Yep, I can.
Anyway, he was in.
People are screaming at us.
Yeah, he was in the JJ, the third Star Trek JJ movie, and he was like an evil alien. Like he was a human that had become an evil alien in that. Spoiler alert for that piece of garbage movie. Kind of looked a little bit like that as well. So yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm looking at a picture of like the Locke character.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now, and he's very. It's very.
There's something familiar about it.
You know what it is that makes me think it's familiar?
Mm.
It's like a smoother version of those crappy Klingons from the first season.
Oh, God. Maybe that's what it
Maybe.
Is.
Maybe. I'm trying to bring up the picture now.
How do you spell his last name? I'm Googling.
His name is Elias Tofex.
No, sorry, Locke. How do you spell, like. I'm sure it's spelled some weird alien way.
It's L apostrophe AK.
Okay. I want to see.
Yeah, it's. Oh, that's very, very weird.
God, you're right. It is giving season one Klingon, isn't
it? That is what it looks like to me.
But there's something in the brow ridges also give me Lars, the changeling from Deep Space Nine. There's something. He'll be something. Given that there's been so many references to in this episode about, you know, previous stuff, he's going to be something.
Yeah, very weird.
Mm.
Very weird.
I wonder if he'll be, and I guess we should get to the main point of this episode, maybe he's one of the progenitors. Maybe he's related to the progenitors somehow.
Ooh.
Because there is that weird crossover where the main progenitor from that episode of Next Generation, and they showed her in this episode several times.
She is the changeling chick.
It's Salme Jen, the actress who played the female changeling. And I feel like the progenitors are almost like inspired the look of the changeling. Because I don't think the changelings had been. Oh, and I guess Odo would have been seen on screen by that point, wouldn't he? Because when was the episode of that episode?
That was season six.
So yeah. I guess that was the start of DS9 was around then, so maybe there was some overlap there.
So what Maddie and I are talking about here, so this whole season of Discovery, like from what we can tell so far, is going to follow the idea set out in, was it season 6, episode 20, I want to say?
That's a good call. It's the chase, right? Is it called The Chase?
Yeah, now I have to look it up. Make sure I'm right. Let's have a look.
I see. This is how old I am. A lot of the time when I'm trying to remember like the number of the episode, I get confused because I'm so old. I watched all my Voyager stuff on VHS where you would get two episodes per VHS tape and it was 1.1, 1.2, all the way up to 1.13. So in my head I go, oh yeah, Bride of Chaotica, that's episode 9. No, that was like VHS 5.9.
Maddie, I was right. What's the season 6, episode 20. I pulled that out of my ass. And you're right, it's called The Chase.
The Chase. Yeah.
So for those that don't remember this episode, so I'll just read a little bit here. It says, Captain Picard, who has always been a student of archaeology, is visited by his former professor or mentor, Professor Richard Galen. Galen, who Picard said is like a father who understood me, states that he has come across something in his travels which could be the most profound discovery of their time. However, Galen will not tell Picard about it. All right, so essentially what we found by the end of this episode of The Next Generation was that all bipedal species in our galaxy, humanoids, have been created by this one race.
Evolved from, wasn't it? We all kind of evolved.
Well, they seeded all the different planets because they realized that they were alone.
Yeah, right.
Out there, so they seeded all of these different planets.
Yeah, because there was
to create life.
While the Enterprise was chasing it down, there was a Cardassian ship, there was a Klingon ship, and then didn't the Romulans show up at last minute on the planet? They'd kind of been and then it turns out, hey, guess what, guys, we're all related. If you go back far enough, we're all related.
Yeah, it's. And I guess at the time, like looking at, so what year was that? That would have been
92, maybe?
Yeah, somewhere along those lines. That was directed by Jonathan Frakes too, that episode.
Oh, wow.
That was 1993, April 26, 1993. I'm guessing that obviously us here on Earth, we're many different races. Yeah, and we've all came from the same place. I guess that's what they were trying to get across.
Yeah.
You know, through this episode.
Although, I wonder how that factors into that Distant Origin episode of Voyager where there was all the hadrosaurs that evolved.
From dinosaurs,
and then left the planet. I wonder how that factors in. It's an interesting little thread to pick up on.
Yeah, it's like that they've taken like this tiny thread from, it's the whole episode, and they've turned it into what seemingly is going to be a season-long arc.
But it's also, it's a thread from 30 years ago in our, in real world.
I like it.
Yeah, absolutely. And given that it's
And not, in show, it's 800 years.
Yeah, it's not like it's Picard season 4 picking up that thread from their own history. It's this whole different show with no connecting characters picking up this thread and running with it. So it makes you wonder, maybe if they'd done that in season 1...
Talking,
maybe the fandom wouldn't be so divided.
Talking about connecting characters, Fred.
Oh, yes, our little Sung
type
android.
Our Sung type android. Now, I was not expecting that.
Did they say?
He was designed off Alton Sung.
I thought they said like Arik Sung.
I thought it was Alton Sung, they said.
But that's not Data's father, is it? His name is...
Noonien,
that's it. Yeah. So was Alton, was he the brother or whatever that we met in Picard?
Think so.
Yeah, right. Okay.
So he's still a Sung type android. He definitely had the same skin tone and type of hair as Data.
100%. For a second I was like, is that the same actor who played the bald Sung style android or synths from Picard, like season 1 and 2, and then they just whacked like a really bad wig on him because it was obviously it was an intentional bad wig. It almost looked like Data's like Friar Tuck wig with a little bit of extra on top. But obviously, as watching this, the episodes haven't been released yet, so we can't really look up IMDb for the actors and see if it's the same person. But it definitely gave me vibes of those like the Mars Insurrection bald synths from Picard.
It seems like Fred here, he likes to collect things as well, which is pretty cool because they mentioned he spoke about self-stealing stem bolts and they showed one.
They showed one.
I thought that was very cool.
And that looked like it could have been a prop from DS9. It was that well created. But it makes sense that, it's wild to think that, Data could have lived this long, which I guess we know from Time's Arrow. But it'd be funny to think of, Lore still running around or B4 still running around at this time, 800 years later. But it's obviously this Fred is obviously still kind of obsessed with the era he was created.
Yeah.
And I almost wonder, is it also from like a self-maintenance point of view? Like he needs tech from around that era to keep his systems running. Because even Stamets says at one point, he's like, we don't have wires in the 32nd century anymore. How am I going to... Luckily, I saved some. How are we gonna sort of, you know, dissect this guy to figure out what's going... It was a shame he sort of died so quickly.
Very quickly.
And they kind of moved on. When I saw it, I thought, oh, this is going to be like a big plot point.
Yeah, but I thought so too.
I don't think moving on is going to be a big thing, so we'll see.
I thought he was going to be like part of the big bad of the season.
Well, given that, you know, they just, oh, how conveniently found a Romulan ship from that same era, it would kind of make sense. And obviously, you know, Fred looked at the book and knew what...
Oh, yeah, he opened up that the puzzle box and found the book, yeah.
And kind of read through the book and knew the importance of it. So, yeah, it would be a shame if that's the last we see of Fred or have any connections to Fred.
Yeah, well, mentioning the book as well. So the book is basically the first clue that is going to be sending us off, you know, on the season's adventure, I guess. So how do you feel, like... Discovery has always been the show where it's a season-long arc the whole time.
Yeah.
And we don't really have those standalone episodes, such as, like, Strange New Worlds.
Yeah.
Right? Because I'm enjoying Strange New Worlds immensely. I think purely because it is that sort of standalone episodes, but it still has a season arc over the top of it.
Much like Deep Space Nine did, I feel like.
Very much,
Deep Space Nine had standalone episodes that would also add little bits to an overall arc, but the overall arc wasn't the main driving force.
Well, even Voyager too, like the whole arc of Voyager, trying to get home.
Yeah, but even there was the Kazon arc, and then there was the Borg arc, and there was the Hirogen, you know, there was...
There's still those standalone episodes.
Yeah, absolutely. Whereas, yeah, this show I think is much more CW-esque in that it's... That is going to be the thing they're going to be focusing on for the rest of the series. And then the other things are going to be secondary. Whereas old school Trek would be more, we're going to do a standalone episode because we need it for syndication. Mm. And then the season-long arc will be the B plot or the C plot. And we're just going to give you little crumbs here and there. Whereas, yeah, I think this will be much more And I guess if it follows, like I really enjoyed the chase and the way it was going from place to place and following clues and deciphering things. That could be a fun little way to go. And, you know, it's only a 10 episode season. So
yeah.
You know.
So speaking of a chase, you know, since you mentioned the chase, the Sandrunners. Now, obviously, Michael and Raina and, you know, Booker, they go down to this planet, you know, to, you know, chase down, was it Molan Lork?
Molan Lork.
The Sandrunners, they've got their own shields. I thought that was cool, but... Holy crap, do those things go fast.
Yeah, it's giving very like Star Wars Endor speeder.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, very much.
I guess kind of, I think probably Lower Decks is to blame for that. They introduced those like hover motorcycle things and when they were on the holodeck and stuff like that. So, yeah, it tracks. It's not my favorite thing. I think the shields were just, the line must be drawn here this far, no further for me. But, the you know, I get it.
Yeah. This far, no farther.
Well, I had the button.
Yeah. not my favorite thing. And then obviously that led into probably my, I don't know if my least favorite thing, but my most WTF moment for this episode, which was, oh, we're going to stop
the avalanche
by creatively crashing our two ships into the shockwave on the planet and just nosedive straight into it.
Yeah, look. Obviously, yeah, 32nd century, we're still sort of figuring out the technology ourselves, like as Craig and Maddie.
As viewers, yeah.
As viewers. Is it possible? Obviously, we saw it on screen, so obviously they made it canon now that can be done.
They just sat there. We didn't really see any kind of like, what did they do? Just like, all right, red-headed fake 7 of 9 chick, back it up, and they just beep, beep. Beep, beep. And like, what? How did they? What? I don't.
Like,
I want to know more.
I go back in my brain. I think, you know, Generations, Enterprise D, crashing the saucer section into the planet, and then it was obviously there for quite a while before Geordi ripped it back out. But I mean, obviously, guess, you know, it wasn't 800 years difference.
Yeah, 800 years difference. It wasn't at full power. It didn't have shields and the, you know, the main deflector and all that kind of stuff. But, yeah, I don't know. It just kind of seems to me to go against the whole, the ship aspect. It's like, sure, if they did some kind of, like, low atmosphere maneuver and, like, flew into the shockwave with the deflectors at full and kept the momentum going and kind of almost like Moses, you know, breaking, like splitting the Red Sea or whatever. If they'd have done that, I could maybe have bought it, but I don't know. Them just like, just nosediving into the planet, but then no damage.
Joining
to
their
the
shields
ship.
Together.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, look, it was weird.
It was weird.
Like, obviously it was effective. Like, it saved, you know, hundreds of thousands of people.
Mm.
But
I think it just, and like,
I don't know how I feel about it.
Yeah, it's those little things like that that just make me go, do these people know what they're doing?
But then I also like, have to bring myself back to go, this is not 24th, 25th century.
Correct.
32nd century.
But it's just little things like when Mol gets shot and Locke freaks out about it and like, oh, you okay? You okay? She goes, yeah, nothing some hypo spray won't fix.
Yes. That stuck with me as well.
That's not how you use that word.
Does a hypo spray in the future do this? I don't know.
But just the way it's you know, to me, it's the grammar. Nothing some hypo spray won't fix. The correct English for there would be nothing a hypo spray won't fix. The hypo spray is the tool to apply the medication.
Yeah.
That's like saying, oh, there's a...
Maybe she's not very edumacated.
Yeah. There's a loose nail. Oh, nothing some hammer won't fix. That's not how you speak the language. So it's just little things like that where I go, oh, and I do feel like, you know, the comic book guy from The Simpsons when I have those moments.
Maybe the universal translator like, fucked it up. Who knows?
Yeah, there's just little things like that where I go, oh, that kind of ruined it for me.
So Tilly starts hacking for obviously Michael to figure out what the hell this whole Red Directive mission is about. And a couple of Starfleet security people come into her quarters and go off their tree until the Admiral comes in. He was happy for it, basically, from what I could tell. Yeah. Like, because he wants to know what the hell was going on too.
Yeah. Yeah, which I guess, you know, does help with what I was saying before about I don't know why the guy from upstairs in the first place. But yeah, I guess it does give the Admiral something to do, and then yeah, we can be more like, oh, the Admiral's on our side more than the guy from up is. So yeah, that's interesting.
So
like I said, I still thought it was going to be Saru's wife though, or his fiance.
Yeah, so that's a new thing. Yeah, Saru obviously, and the president of Navarre, which is the new name for Vulcan. They're now engaged. So I've just written her down as the Vulcan chick.
Well, isn't she like half Vulcan, half Romulan or something? Haven't they like Vulcan and Romulan doesn't exist anymore and they're all Navarre?
No, so obviously Romulus has gone kablooey back in the 25th century.
Yeah, no, I just mean as a species.
Yeah.
Like, because obviously...
They're Navarians, yeah.
Yeah, Vulcans and Romulans have a common ancestry and we're two separate species. But I think now in the 32nd century, they don't consider themselves either Vulcan or Romulan. They're back to being one species again,
yeah,
as Navarre.
I don't know.
I think from my very random thoughts, like memories of season.
I don't know. Those people that watch Discovery a lot and actually really like it and have watched it more than once, please jump in the comments and you know, let us know how stupid we are.
Yeah, it feels weird doing a podcast where I don't have encyclopedic knowledge of stuff.
Yeah, because like the Stargate ones that we do, all the other Star Trek stuff,
yeah,
like we just
like
know
I,
this stuff.
I know my stuff. Whereas, yeah, I don't know the history of Discovery enough.
No, and, you know, that's on us, really.
Mm.
Or maybe it's on the writers for writing the first few seasons terribly. I don't know.
Yeah.
All right, so the progenitors from the Next Generation, yep, they created all life in the galaxy. Yep, we know that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we so, and that one thread from that episode, back in season 6, episode 20 of the Next Generation, that is what this whole season is going to follow, you know, from what we can tell. Mm. So overall, though, I liked that episode. And it's got potential. It's...
Yeah.
I've liked this more than most other episodes of Discovery that I've seen.
Yeah, I think there's certainly been certain seasons of TV. I specifically, again, think of like the CW Arrowverse and stuff like that, where, you know, the first four or five episodes start out really, really strong and then it just starts to shit the bed. And I don't know that I ever really felt that with Discovery. To me, they always kind of all felt just as bad as each other.
They just seem to fall short on what it could have been.
Yeah, but this one kind of, I'm like, yeah, aside from my little nitpicky things of me being stuck in the 2370s, I'm like, yeah, okay. Yeah, so I'm interested to see, you know, where it'll go. I did spot a line that made me laugh that Stamets said when they're talking about that song Android that made me think of you, just because they said that one word, where he goes, centuries later and we still speak his name. What a legacy. And I'm just like, ooh, all the legacy hardcore fans.
Oh, yeah.
Like, give us Star Trek Legacy.
Well, mentioning Star Trek Legacy, it doesn't really seem like it's going to happen.
Oh, really?
From what I can tell, they're doing the Section 31 movie.
Yeah.
Which I think has wrapped shooting or is about to wrap.
Wow, that's fast.
Yeah, like it's... And they're releasing it on Paramount Plus, which is great.
Cool.
Potentially, I've heard something out there where maybe they could do Legacy as one of those Paramount Plus movies to see how it goes.
Okay.
But yeah, at the same time, it seems to be what everyone wants. Like Strange New Worlds, everyone wanted it, so they made it. Like, and it's just been a moneymaker.
Yeah.
So unless there's conflicting times with, you know, actors and, you know, projects and stuff, but I can't see Legacy being a failure if they did make it.
Well, I guess at this point they can sort of, yeah, make whatever they want and sort of cast appropriately for that. They don't even have to go, oh, we have to get Patrick Stewart back. We have to get this. They can just have whoever they want.
Well, Patrick Stewart's been talking about looking at other scripts and stuff as well to continue the story of, you know, Jean-Luc. You know, could Jean-Luc just be in, say, Legacy for, you know, the first 5 minutes to, you know, to start it off. Yeah, you know? Springboard, yeah.
Yeah, the same way it's like, and I always thought it was a really nice sort of tradition that, you know, the 2370 shows did. It's like DeForest Kelly came and did a cameo in
the very first episode of Farpoint, The Next Generation.
And they always said that was his way of handing off the series.
And then Picard
showed up in Deep Space Nine and handed off the series. And the funnest one was obviously Quark shows up in the Voyager and hands off. And Voyager leaves from Deep Space Nine, which I thought was a really, really nice touch. Like that's one of my favorite visuals ever is Voyager docked at Deep Space Nine. I think that's and then leaving from Deep Space Nine. I love that image so much. Yeah, so I think it would be a good way to sort of they can do whatever they want.
Yeah. Well, yeah, as I said, I liked it. On IMDb at the moment, I think it's actually got...
Well, I guess if, you know, there's people like us that have gotten screeners and stuff like that, of maybe less some reviews and stuff like that.
It's got an 8 out of 10.
Yeah. But I guess what we're Monday at the moment and it comes out, what, Thursday our time?
April 4th it comes out.
So,
it's...
See what happens.
Yeah, there's obviously no written reviews on here, which is a good thing.
Yeah, everyone's under embargo until the 4th, so...
Yeah, but, you know, it's got a few 10s and a few 9s, and it's got a 2 and a 1. There's nothing else in between that, though.
I mean, that's Discovery for you. It's love it or hate it.
Look, I'm optimistic for the season going ahead. I went into doing this particular podcast for this season probably more hopeful than you. Would I be incorrect in saying that?
Yeah, I have no strong feelings either way. I'm just like, it doesn't register on my...
Like, I want it to do well. Like, I want it to be good stories and good writing and, you know, engaging. So, you know, so far this first episode, yeah, obviously it's not a 10 for me.
No.
Maybe a 6 or a 7, you know?
Yeah.
Now, if I was to put a number to it.
Which is, I think, pretty high for a Discovery episode in our minds.
Like, there's some definite things to like about it, and there's a couple of minor things that I might not like about it, but nothing too bad.
Yeah, which I think is just personal taste, really.
Yeah, I liked it. So, anyway, Maddie, that's it for this episode.
Yeah.
So, where can we find you on socials, mate?
You can find me on Instagram at HighPitchMatty, HighPitchMatty.
Whoa, he got it right.
Don't even know whether I spelled that right.
No, sure. You did. You, okay, you got it right. And you can find myself on Instagram and Facebook at Geeking Camo. All right, until...
And, we've got it's a double premiere, so I guess we'll release episode 2 right now.
In, 2 minutes. Let's so, yeah, go get yourself a piss break.
Get into geek.